Hello.
Hello.
You're such a professional.
There you go. Hi. So I'm a surprise, not Tom, and I will be presenting some work that I've presented somewhat recently, earlier in the autumn, that I've done with Liz Parks, because I know a strange number of Liz's in my life. Responses to third-party complaints and opinion formulations about others' technologies. So this is a project that I've been working on related to all sorts of things that I've been interested in that have somehow coalesced around technology. Full disclosure, I don't actually care about technology that much. I've ended up sucked into it for various reasons. So I have a project with Stephen DiDomenico and Joshua Racklaw on how people orient to devices as they become made relevant in talk, and also how people use the content of those devices to then introduce different things in their talk. And with Liz, I've been focusing more on how technology is topicalized. However, because today is focusing on action, the fact that they're talking about technology does not have to be relevant to anyone. So if you're interested in that, fine, pursue it. But I'm interested mostly in today talking a little bit about complaints, and specifically how they're responded to. I will talk about various things, as you might expect. So in terms of technology and conversation, as I mentioned, I've done some projects, so our work on how people introduce devices into conversation and read off of them or show photographs from them, and also how people assess people's identities on the basis of how they use technology and how they post different things through social media. And also our most recent paper, which is how people figure out what to do with the different chimes and summons that phones elicit in the course of face-to-face conversation. So when somebody's phone does a little something or other, do they orient it to it, and at what point in the sequence do they do that? Now, the data that we're looking at, myself and Liz Parks, is a little bit different. So these are opinion discussions. So she has data on focus groups, and then I have a small set of data on people that were given a video about technology, and then that was meant to be a starting point for them to continue talking for an assignment for a class, unsurprisingly, as we make our students do sometimes. And so they were conversations where technology or topics related to technology were explicitly put on the table as something to discuss, which is why we ended up putting our data together. And so this is a sort of very broadly a form of what Maynard calls perspective display. So the kind of thing people are doing is giving opinions, trading opinions. Somebody says their assessment of something or other, and then the other person says something similar back. And in particular, what we found is that when people are talking about technology, they pretty much just complain. So there's not a lot of praising of technology. We don't get extended sequences of people talking about how technology has massively positively affected their lives, even though I think we would all agree it probably has. But typically what people do is they launch various kinds of complaints. And sometimes they complain about their own interactions with technology. But most of the time they complain about other people's use of technology. And it can be specific to particular others. So they will talk about, you know, my children do this, or my grandparents don't understand this. But oftentimes they will also complain about categories of people. So they will talk about young people or old people of some general type. So we found this very interesting. And we have a paper that is coming out focusing on how people formulate those opinions and the different ways in which they formulate opinions as sort of directly negative or indirectly negative, and what it says about the kinds of management of their identity. But for today, we're focusing a little bit more on how people respond or do recipiency to these kinds of opinions and specifically complaints. So we're not looking so much at when the next person takes a turn, although a lot of the things that I'll be pointing out are things that people are sort of launch turns with. But it's more the recipiency that they're doing along the way to get the other person's complaint told, either by supporting it or challenging it. Typically, what we find is that they don't do a lot of challenging. They tend to avoid overtly disagreeing with something, even though the conversation has largely been framed as a discussion where people might disagree. So these kinds of conversations about technology are thought to be, and again, this is like a focus group perspective, good places to get people to do disagreement without it being really like frightening. Like, we're not talking about politics, right? We're not talking about religion, but we're talking about something that people might have disagreement about. And it turns out that even when people do disagree, they tend not to, they follow the same kind of preferences for affiliation and alignment and agreement that we see in lots of other contexts. So as I mentioned, this is looking at technology as a topical resource, so not so interested in what people might be saying about the technology itself, although you'll find that sometimes it is quite amusing what people say about the technology, but we're interested more in how people are sort of launching and responding to these complaints. So this is part of the various literature on assessments, negative assessments of things, and complaints about things, and stance delivery, and all sorts of that stuff. We have, I want to say maybe 20-ish, 30-ish hours of data, and Liz's is all focus groups, as I mentioned, and then I've got a smaller set of these kinds of topic-focused discussions. I think we have so far almost 50 excerpts, but of course when we're talking about things that people are doing and their recipients, it's very hard sometimes to cut them off at specific places, so the number is somewhat arbitrary. Things that we did not, or that we're not focusing on in this paper, we're not looking at sort of constant recipiency, so we're not looking at like all the eye contact or laughter. There's not a lot of laughter, but we're looking more at sort of the verbal things that people do at various stages when a complaint has already been launched or directly after a complaint has initially been launched. So the examples that I'll be showing are mostly kind of like diving at little points within the conversation as it's already underway. Now, this paper is framed for a somewhat different audience, so this is a rather repurposed talk that I'm giving you. So you'll notice that they're sort of categorized in a funny way, because I'm trying to contribute to the literature on qualitative research and the kinds of things that they do when they're doing like thematic analysis and kind of ignoring the interactions. So trying to get people to notice that you can still look at things like what opinions do people have on technology without getting so sucked into deciding that it has to be positive or negative or support or not support, and look more at the interactional components of that. So you'll see I've got some funny names for things here. So the first example that I'll be showing, and I'm not gonna show the videos for all the examples, partly because I don't have them all kind of queued up, and also I don't have permission for all of them, but I'll show you a couple examples from the same recording that are good demonstrations of the kinds of things that I'm talking about. And basically, these are different kinds and ways of recipiency that we found in our data. So different ways that people kind of support or not the complaint that somebody is telling. And this was the most positive way. It's not common, but it's noticeable. So hopefully, this is not muted or anything, and we'll hear it. Oh.
I don't want, like, we literally have been brought up with cell phones, and like,
yeah.
Since kids are getting them so early now, we
so
don't know
early.
Anything different. We literally, that's what we love.
Like,
off.
I got a cell phone when I was I didn't get it until I was 15.
Yeah, I got one when I was 13, I think.
Yeah, I didn't get it until I was 15, and even at 15, my dad, I had to beg for it, because he was
yeah.
like, you're 15, and my cousins were like 10 and 12.
Exactly, they have, like, it's insane, and like,
mm-hmm.
literally they take over our life. Like, when I'm like, have nothing to do, I'm like, why not use myself? Like, my mom.
All right, so obviously the snippet I'm focusing on is in the middle, but you get to hear a little bit of what comes before and what comes after. And the kinds of things that happen in this sort of bandwagoning is just in incredible sort of affiliative responses to things. So that people are not, again, this is not really taking a turn. This is sort of interjecting a bit of a turn, but it continues. So it's helping the complaint basically get told in such a way that shows a lot of affiliation with the teller. And agreement also on the particular stance that is being taken there. So we have lots of repetition of similar terms. So for, you know, so early in line 4, so early line 6, and overt agreement. So not necessarily in this example, but there's a lot of sort of explicit on record, yes, exactly. Collaborative completion of turns, collaborative overlap, latching turns, very little sort of pauses between things, and a very sort of fluid speakership exchange throughout the course of the conversation. So this is what I would say is sort of like the most convergent, let's say, that people get when they're complaining about stuff. This is just another example, I won't play it, but very similar kinds of thing going on in line 11. So Lila's sort of latching on and collaboratively completing and launching sort of another thing that gets to get done. And Megan also is following up on that, and they both sort of very easily trade back and forth this very, very negative stance towards the effect that these cell phones are having on their lives. So this kind of recipiency aligns with the project that the person has launched in their complaint. It agrees with the particular stance they take on the topic, and it affiliates with the speaker in their particular emotional display of things. And it tends to be prefatory to sharing their own very similar opinion. Yes. Another thing that we all have heard before is just the yas that help things get told. And they tend to be ambiguous in terms of whether they are explicitly affiliating or going on record as agreeing with things. But you see that sometimes they are used to introduce a new turn at line one, for example. Other times they are continuing the turn that they've already launched. Particularly, though, we focus on the ones where people who are not necessarily in the course of telling a complaint are responding to the complaint in some way just to continue it. So that's sort of a classic thing we know about. And it happens here, obviously. So we have some affirmative lexical items. Yeah is a really common one, but you do occasionally get yeses, or we didn't look at the mm-hmms, but that is serving, I think, a very similar kind of function. And across the speaker recipient, when it's sort of happening when both parties are doing a lot of yeah-ing, it seems to display more of the affiliation, the alignment, and the agreement that I was talking about before. So if you only get, for example, recipient yeahs, sometimes that is doing other things. It's sort of saying, yeah, 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 I'm trying to take a turn, right? If it's in lots of yeahs in succession, or it could simply be a yeah, I'm listening. But when you get yeahs like this, where people are sort of using yeah in confluence together, it seems to suggest that there's more of that kind of affiliation in the AAA that I referred to there. But it's not quite as intense as the bandwagoning stuff. You get another example here where we've got some yas and also another variation, which is right. So this minimally, at its very minimal, it aligns with the telling, right? It helps the telling get done. When it seems to happen a lot across speakers, it seems to be potentially more affiliative. But it makes possible the participant to share their own opinions. So it's a way of potentially getting a turn or setting somebody else up to get a turn. And then we have some other things that people have talked about, sort of pro forma agreement type stuff. This is more of a, we're not going to take the no too seriously here, but we'll see what happens with it, because this is another example.
I'm busy.
Exactly. And it's like literally you don't even need to like what I was saying before, how some of my friends that I know, they literally live off their cell phone.
Yes.
They don't even live, I feel like they don't even live in the world anymore because
no.
They walk. And I tell them, I'm like, get off your cell phone. Like, you don't even know what's going on around you anymore. It's literally all it is like looking down your cell phone, texting this person. Like, they don't even, you're like communicating with someone like
she goes and say, people are dying because they're texting while they're driving. So this is really interesting. I was surprised at how often this happened in conjunction, which was the kind of yeah that I was talking about before, so some sort of affirmative lexical item, followed almost immediately by a no, which is not doing a no like a rejection, of course. It's doing an affiliative no. So you get a lexical yes or yeah affirmation followed by some lexical no in immediate succession. Responsive to grammar, so it's supporting the previous turn. So if you were to sort of imagine what else could be added to the no when she says, I feel like they don't even live in this world anymore, no, they don't, right? You can kind of see why it's fitted to what just came before. And this is another example of that. So you have they're talking about looking things up in the library, which we're familiar with, so I don't even go and look at the journals. We have all those print journals. Does anyone go to the library and look up journals anymore? I remember those days. So in line three, yeah, who has time to go searching through all those magazines? No, nobody has time to do that, right? So when you get these sorts of things, they agree with the content, they align with the stance of the teller, and they support the telling to sort of get done and also provide a chance to share their own complaint, which is usually what comes next. And then we also have the no agreement, which is basically very similar to the prior thing, but you don't have that same kind of yeah, no structure that appears in other places. So this is one where they're talking about great-grandparents, and she imagines what great-grandparents are saying about them. They're probably sitting there like, what the hell are you guys doing? You guys can function well through your cell phones. I can't. And then in line eight, no, again, you can imagine the rest of what she could say grammatically. No, I can't. So it is in affiliating and agreeing there. So some sort of lexical no, responsive to grammar, still doing that kind of aligning work. So it aligns with the telling. And again, it does make possible to share the own opinion, which is, again, something that frequently comes next in these kinds of sequences. And then this is the pro forma agreement that I was hinting at before, and we get an I mean there, so there's stuff on that. So how this device is making humans obsolete, where we don't even need them. And then they talk about movies where robots are taking over the world, and in line eight, I mean, it's really, I think in our generation, it's really hard to think of things in those terms. So typically, this involves some sort of lexical yeah, so it's a way of taking a turn, but it's followed by some mitigation. And we have a similar example here. So this is Aaron, who's describing, he's been launching a really long, extended complaint. So he's an older person, or he positions himself that way, describing younger people as basically being distracted and sort of dumbed down by modern technology, that they're very good at certain things like apps, but they don't really understand how technology works. So he's been talking about this for a while. And in line 10, as an adult, make me feel it's almost condescending. And we get some pretty strong agreement here from Jim on line 12. But then on line 13, Chase says, yeah, sometimes it's helpful if someone is clarifying something. So we get sort of some form of pro forma agreement followed by some sort of mitigation of that. It still generally supports the core of the complaint. So in general, we saw very few people overtly ever disagreeing about anything. But this was something that we saw a little bit more frequently, that kind of work that people are doing to say, yeah, okay, what you're talking about is generally visible, but at the same time, there are alternative explanations for things or exceptions. So one of the things that we've been looking at is various ways to support or not fully support negative complaining stances. What I've been interested in my own work is generally where people would expect a lot of affiliation and often don't get it. This is almost an opposite situation where we might expect people to disagree because it's a context in which that's been sort of made okay, but typically they don't do that very strongly. One of the things that we are looking at doing with this particular paper is just trying to show that we can kind of match up the kinds of things that people are doing in their complaints and what that is saying about whatever topic you might be interested in, whether it's technology or not, but seeing how the opinion is something that is built through the interaction and not something that you can clearly sort of attribute to a particular speaker and then and tick off in a box and say, yeah, that person has that opinion about that or that opinion about that other thing. So to sum up some of the stuff and also talk about kind of next turns that happened from this. So we basically categorized different ways that people do these recipient actions and tried to clarify what's going on in terms of the affiliative, the alignment, and the agreement around what the complaint is doing, and then also what it allows the participant to do next in the conversation. Obviously, there's a lot of just giving them a chance to give their to take their turn, which is consistent with the perspective display and the sort of general way that these conversations go. But there's a little bit of variation in terms of what the next turn can be doing and how clearly that's set up by what that recipient action did. And that's pretty much it. So, questions?
Thank you. Plenty of time for observation.
Yeah, plenty of time.
We've had one request already, which is you rather cryptically said this is in a paper, but didn't say where it was. So, where is that paper?
Yeah, no, so not this, but the thing that the other one is in Language and Society.
Language and Society.
Yes. Firth.
Merrin.
It's so interesting, thank you. Can we go back to the bandwagoning example? And I just want to see, I didn't take it in enough to know whether what I'm going to say makes any sense at all. Hence my attempt not to ask the first question. But,
well, that's failed.
Yeah, totally.
It's coming. I've turned the sound off, but yeah.
Some misalignment that's really below the surface here, in the sense that kids at line four seems to potentially not be including Laura herself in that, whereas we don't from line seven, and we don't at line seven, suggests then that she does position herself with the kids, but Maggie's, I didn't get a cell phone until I was 15, seems to sort of take herself out of that collective.
Yeah.
So is it possible that although they're in line with your argument, they're maintaining the kind of we're on the same page here on the surface of it, underneath they're actually positioning themselves rather differently in terms of the extent to which their cell phone use dates back as early?
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
No, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I think that is something that's going on and that is negotiated in a lot of these discussions, and one of the things that we focus on in the previous paper that's Firth, is how people implicate themselves in the complaints that they do, and that so oftentimes what you see is people working to position themselves as complaining, but not in sort of an unfair, right? They're managing the subjectivity of the complaint. And so one thing, the way that they do that is by showing that they're sort of displaying awareness that they can occupy the same category that they're complaining about, whether it's on the basis of their use of the cell phone or their particular age-related category. And so in terms of this particular moment here, I think you see this happen in lots of different places where people are kind of occasionally orienting to themselves in or out or on the boundary of categories like kids, young people, current people. You know, they have different ways of naming them. But yeah, I think that is really interesting. Thank you.
I wonder if at line six, Maggie thinks she's agreeing with something, that then it doesn't turn out she's quite agreeing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm not sure in this particular conversation, or at least this moment, where I could definitely say which one, you know, what they're exactly agreeing or disagreeing about. But I agree, it's never quite so straightforward, right, as it necessarily looks, just because it's being oriented to as though they're agreeing, which is part of the kind of alignment they're trying to do. Yeah.
It's an unusually sandboxed and low-risk complaint environment. They're complaining about not just others, but unspecified others.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no personal stake in the recipient of the complaint, in her or his, unless he or she chooses to recategorize themselves as that kind of a person. But
yeah.
That would be a very marked thing to do.
A lot of them, they do, strangely and frequently, latch on to some complaint, the fact that they feel sucked in by these things. I don't know if that's quite addressing what you just said, but this sort of really rampant, sort of very unmitigated negative things about people actually is not super common at all. So they do complain about technology a lot, but they almost always try to account for the fact that they participate in this kind of behavior as well.
Magnus, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I was just thinking what you just said, that, I mean, when they do these complainings about other people, which I guess it's only about other people, right? Not as much about themselves?
They account for the possible complainability of themselves, even if they don't make it.
But
explicit.
Even when they just keep negotiating the other people, they also negotiate themselves, the roles they have,
mm-hmm.
like or the type of people they are, their membership categorization,
yeah.
might even say.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of age is basically a category that gets invoked pretty regularly.
Emily?
I was just wondering about another category of socioeconomic status that kind of, to me, it shows up here, in, or could, is like it's available to be an issue here, even if it doesn't show up more explicitly.
Yeah.
But then it also shows up more explicitly in the TV example.
Yes. yeah.
All of these are expensive things that
right.
are, as much as they are integral and a lot of people have them, there's
mm-hmm.
still that question that could be another thing at stake for them to be making that.
Yeah. That it doesn't come up a lot, but yeah, especially in that conversation that's mentioned with the TV, it does come up in that quite a lot. Yeah.
John Ray.
It's so reassuring to see these young participants being so aware of the limitations of these technologies. And there's lots of really interesting stuff here. One thing that intrigued me about your yes/no category is that suggests that there's a structure to the complaint thing itself. Which is, I mean, the fact that it's ordered in that way, which is that you have a report of some like positive feature of something that's happening, then you get something that isn't happening, something
yeah.
a problem. So I was intrigued by that, but then I wondered, is that two-partedness the consequence of the complainer getting some kind of go-ahead through the
agreement? Yeah.
I wonder if you have any thoughts about that ordering.
Yeah, I mean, part of why I was interested in that ordering is because it came up frequently enough that it seemed to be a phenomenon. But we don't have, I think we have maybe 7 cases of it or something, so we don't have so many, and I haven't looked specifically at sort of that feature of it. But I think, yeah, that's a really interesting point, so look more at that. Thank you.
Julie, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have been here and that you did this. I mean, sorry Tom wasn't here, but this is fantastic. You're helping me write my next paper.
Oh, good.
Because a lot of the complaints I have is about Facebook use, intergenerational. But the point is, there's a big identity thing going on here, and it's what's being managed is the epistemic, what we know, as opposed to the practice, what we do. And your participants seem to have their feet obviously in both camps, but they're negotiating and separating what they know from what they do as an identity. They're creating that, you know, we know more, we know better, we
yeah.
know more, and this is now what we do on the basis of what we know, and
yeah.
this is who we are on that basis. It's brilliant.
Thank you. Thank
there
them.
Another hand raised, that's all. Yes.
Just a sort of wider question, really, or observation or thought. It's looking at the data, I think there's quite a lot of overlapping and correction and realignment going on all the time with that. And just as in the past, and say, organizational talk, you would have it. Lots of modes of verbal talk would be oriented to the way in which textual talk was presented and used, and it would reach into the way in which talk was organized in an organization. I was just wondering to what extent was this group of people who have been talked about here, who were used to, as these people are saying, are orientated to working off of mobile devices, in which if there's multiple people, there's overlapping talk and things coming in later than and responding to things which were out of sync as they would normally be in a sequential ordering in face-to-face talk. Whether what we're sort of seeing here, this is a big supposition, and I'm just throwing it out, is that actually these people cope with forms of overlapping talk and contradictions and going back on themselves and sorting things out, whatever that may be, in ways which are learned from dealing with text, and ways which are normatively acceptable due to the practices which they engage with as their mainstream form of communication, which is via text or written short text, which is quite out of sync. Whereas, so the point being, the simple thing is, have they normalized forms of talk due to text, uses of text?
I mean, I have no idea what it might be due to, but I can say that I've been looking at data more in relation to the work I do with Joshua and Stephen, how people integrate sort of these devices into their co-present interaction. And I have this one piece of data where these three women are watching television, also on their phones, and having a conversation. They're conducting it all simultaneously, and conducting conversations with people that they sometimes bring into the conversation through their phone. And this is not even that recent a data. This is, I think, maybe 2013. So, I mean, that's already years ago now. To me, it looks strange, and I feel suddenly old. But they seem to treat it as fairly unproblematic, and so there may be some sort of interesting evolution going on, and where that's coming from, I'm not sure, but it is certainly an interesting thing we're investigating.
Okay, on that evolutionary note, we'll bring it to an end. Thank you very much, Jessica.
Thank you.